there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your hair. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wing podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. On today's episode, I'm thrilled to welcome a returning guest, Mr. Will Primos. Yeah, that's right, that Will Primos. Back in October when I recorded episode 299 with Will in Mississippi, as we were preparing to collaboratively launch the Truth About Conservation with the other conservation organizations, Mr. Primos brought up the fact that he had just written or co-written a book about becoming a better shooter with his buddy Anthony Matarese. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by both Will and Anthony for this podcast. So we're going to dive in to the brand new book, Straight Shooting for Hunters, by Anthony Matarese Jr. and Will Primos. Before we introduce them, I want to give a shout out to Purina Pro Plan, the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and as I mentioned, the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. All three of my pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, all eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat mission of our organization. That's incredibly important to me. But what's even more important is that Purina has the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. You can learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right, let's get into introductions a little bit. Will, thank you for making this conversation come together. Before we talk about the book, I'm curious, the truth about conservation and what your plans are for your Purdy collection has been out there in the public eye for about, let's say, 6 weeks, 2 months now. What's been the reaction from the public to you donating your prize collection of Purdies to conservation?
Well, for those that I have met that have said something to me or heard about it, it's been overwhelming. The encouragement that they've given me, the idea behind the gun. I had this consecutively serially numbered set of guns from 410, 28, 2016, and 12 Purdy hammer guns that are absolutely gorgeous. They're just handmade. It took me about 20 years to get this collection together. I'm 73, and I thought, you know, I'd like to try to do something for conservation and thank all these organizations that were a part of my life for 50 years. So I ended up hooking up with the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation and told them what some of my ideas were. They helped me develop that. Corinne Johan at the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation is the head of marketing there. Between CEO Jeff Crane and Kevin Perry, there that run the organization, they've just gotten behind it 100%. I just left the Pheasants and Quail Fest there in Kansas City. It was a little overwhelming, you know, people walking up to you going, "Holy crud, man, that is awesome!" So, you know, the idea is to try to create a ripple effect. I mean, you can give a little money away and try to make a difference, and it becomes a flash in the pan. But this has a life of its own, where people are talking about it. And also, I think one of the things that's come about from it that I didn't realize would come about was that other people are thinking, you know, I've got this da-da-da that has some value to it. I wonder if I could give that to conservation. Hmm. So the guns will be auctioned by Rock Island, who has done a phenomenal job. We chose them, one of the main reasons, not only because they're the best in the world at auctioning fine guns, but they forgave their seller's commissions. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars of a commission. Mm-hmm. And so that right there was a big reason to choose Rock Island. And they have been an integral part of making this a success. Matt Peake from that organization runs their TV, video, all of the ads, all the media, and he does an incredible job. Really enjoyed getting to know him. So here we are. It's taken a life of its own, and we'll see. It's going to reach more and more of the public as it gets known. But anybody can go to the Truth About Conservation website, truthaboutconservation.com, and see the story.
Yeah. thetruthaboutconservation.com. You can see that the proceeds that are raised are going to be split up between the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, National Wild Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and our organization, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And the beauty is we can all stretch those dollars and, you know, match them with grant funds from states and feds. And check it out on the website. You could take a look at the photos of the collection, and the auction will happen in December. So can't thank you enough, Will, for putting that together.
Thank you.
And thank you for kicking off this conversation. We'll jump to Anthony. Anthony, you're, as I read about you in the book, you're the most decorated shotgunner in competition in American history, which is an incredible statement. Let's start with a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you, you know, how you got involved in shooting, and what you do for a living.
So I'm born in Wilmington, Delaware. I grew up in Pennsville, New Jersey, which is a little bit to the southeast of Philadelphia, along the Delaware Bay, if you're looking at a map there. So the part of New Jersey that I'm from is not exactly where most people would think of when they think of New Jersey. So I grew up, my family was in the hunting business from, say the 1950s, 1960s as an outfitter for, goose hunting. My grandparents did that. My dad kind of grew up in that business. And then we have a hunting preserve that they opened in, around 1980, right here in, Pennsville, New Jersey. And I grew up there. So I grew up on a hunting preserve, and, we put in a small sporting clay course for something for the hunters to warm up and learn to be better shooters. And that's kind of really what hunting was or what sporting clays was at the time. You know, it was just taking off from people that have shot skeet and trap, and sporting clays was kind of a new sport. That was in 1991. So I was like 7 years old and throwing targets by hand and taking around customers. And so I kind of grew up around it. And I started shooting and hunting and hunted and shot throughout my childhood. I entered my first competition at age 10. And this will be my 31st year. This is my 31st year of competition, taking it seriously, you know, since that first competition that I entered. And I graduated. I taught shooting all through. I started teaching shooting, which is kind of an interesting story. I started teaching shooting at 14 or 15 years old, just out of the necessity that the sport was growing and people wanted to learn. And I had had really good instruction from age 12 by a guy named Dan Carlisle, who was an Olympic trap and skeet shooter. And then he moved into sporting clays as sporting clays. He was a shooter before there was sporting clays in America. So he moved into sporting clays after he got done with skeet and trap. But anyway, I learned excellent shotgun fundamentals from a young age, and out of a necessity for people that are coming out and shooting clays at our range and didn't know what to do, and novice shooters or even more advanced shooters, I started taking them out and teaching shooting lessons at a very young age. And that was really Dan, my shooting coach. He had lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and that's when I was taking a lot of instruction from him. I mean, I would take instruction a couple times a month for 3 years. And you know, when he moved back to Texas, he's originally from Texas, I was like 15 years old. And he said, well, you might as well start teaching these people around here, because, you know, there's plenty of business. So that's how I got into, you know, teaching shooting. So I graduated college. I kept my teaching going all through college. I'd come home and work every weekend. And when I graduated college, I decided to just stick with teaching shooting, and that would enable me to continue my shooting career, which I had devoted, you know, 10 years of my life to it at that point, right? You know, say around 20 years old, and I didn't want to just, you know, quit. And I felt that a, you know, regular job would limit my possibilities to travel and compete, et cetera. So I then continue to work a little bit within my family business. I still work within the family business today, but I'm kind of, I do more of the marketing side and big events, et cetera. So I don't necessarily have to be out on the operating. I'm out on the range every day and I can help them operate, you know, before work, after work, work on my computer, et cetera. So that's kind of my background, you know, from my competitive shooting and how I got into it, and kind of how I got into teaching shooting, which is, you know, where I spend most of my time now.
So I mentioned that you're the most decorated shooter in American history, and a lot of people don't, you know, they don't follow shooting the way they would Major League Baseball, for instance.
Yep.
So give, what's that mean? Like in terms of, you know, medals and honors, championships, what have you competed in?
I've won the U.S. Open. So I won the U.S. Open in sporting clays 4 times.
Wow.
Which is a, you know, it's a hard competition to win. I've won the national championship once. I've won the world championship twice. And then I've, you know, I've been at the top of the game. That's probably the thing I'm the most proud of. I've been at the top of the game for a long time, you know, and it's a major commitment to stay at the top of any sport, you know, for that long. You know, I've been on the podium at the world championship 10 times, you know, so top three in the world 10 times, you know, so, I mean, that's my biggest accomplishment, is just consistently, you know, consistently showing up every year and staying at the top of the leaderboard. So we'll see how long we can keep doing.
So is there an Olympic angle here too?
There's no Olympics in sporting clays. I did shoot Olympic trap for a year or two. And I actually made a world championship team, and it was in 2016. We did not qualify.
Okay.
For the Olympics that year. And then I just didn't pursue doing it any further. Just, I have a couple kids at that time. Now I got 4 kids, and just with business and my shooting school and still wanting to shoot sporting clays, was not really a viable option for me in terms of just life, you know.
Sure.
So too much of a commitment to do at that moment in time.
So it throughout the book, Straight Shooting for Hunters, there's photography of you out in the field. So I think there's a perception in general public, like there's a group of people that shoot regularly and there's a group of people that hunt regularly, and there's not a whole lot of overlap. Do you think that there's that perception as well? Because you seem to be living both as a hunter and as a competitive shooter.
Yeah. So I'll kind of explain it in the context of what you said. You know, so for me, I've hunted my whole life. You know, I started off hunting. You know, I killed a goose with a 410 before I ever shot a clay target.
Mm-hmm.
I still go goose hunting, duck hunting, a little bit upland birds, deer hunting. My kids are old enough to go. They're taking them deer hunting and duck hunting. If you look at the most serious competitive sporting clay shooters, almost all of them hunt, and they love it, you know, and they're really good in the field, right? You know, they're excellent shots. When we started, say, our sporting clay range, most of the people that were going out to a sporting clay range at that point were hunters that were trying to become better in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to a skeet or a trap range, sporting clays is a more representation of all the different shots. So at that point in time, there was a very high percentage of people that were out there on a sporting clay range that were also hunters. As the sport grew and developed into its own sport, you know, it's not just a thing for hunters to get ready to shoot anymore. So there are a large percentage of people that shoot clays now that don't hunt. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would still say, if I had to guess, you know, if you took the whole population of people in the United States that shoot clay targets regularly, I would still guess 30% of them hunt avidly, right? Mm-hmm. But if you looked at that 25 years ago, it would be 90% of them hunt avidly. And it's not that the percentage, it's just more people join the sport and they're shooting clays instead of playing golf, you know.
That makes
sense.
Shooting
clays instead of going bass fishing, you know, on their Saturday morning off. So if we look at, you know, the overlap that you're talking about, and it's kind of the context of how we even got to where we are here with Will and I writing this book, you know, you can definitely become a much better shooter in the field by performing your skill set on a clay target range because you have opportunity, you know, so getting out there on the clay target range gives you as many shots that you want to shoot at to get better at hitting that crossing duck versus if you're only trying to hit that crossing duck on the opportunities that you get during duck season or that going away pheasant or quail or whatever it is, it's just more difficult because there's less opportunities. So, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, clay target shooting is going to make you a better shooter. There is, there are, there's people that think, well, people that shoot clay targets, they're not good hunters. Well, I can tell you that the top 10 people that I would take into the field to kill the most amount of birds are all world level sporting clay shooters, you know? So there are people that are pretty good at clays that aren't that good at hunting, but mostly just because they don't hunt. Okay. You know, they go hunting once a year. So they're out of their element. Right.
Sure.
So anybody being out of their element's not going to be that proficient. Right.
Right.
Definitely clay target shooting, can make you a better bird shot.
Yeah. If you combine the ability to read the terrain as a hunter and read a dog and what's happening with the dog, and then you marry that to somebody that's practiced on a sporting clay range, then you have a lethal combination, I think.
I mean, there's no doubt about all that. And that's the reason Anthony and I are together, because Will Primo's been shooting a shotgun just about his entire over 65 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I wasn't very good. So when I finally, I mean, there were certain shots I wouldn't take, like big long crossers or even a close crosser. You know? I mean, if the ducks were coming down through the trees or rising, I could point at them and get them. I mean, I was good at it. But, and that's a lot of the hunting I did. But Anthony wrote the book, you know, Straight Shooting. It's an incredible coffee table book. It is everything about sporting clays. And Kerry Luft was the editor on it, same guy who edited our book. And he's a masterclass shooter, so he gets it and understands it. And that book, Straight Shooting, I spent 3 months dissecting it and making cliff notes. I have 92 pages of incredible, precise notes. Used them yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how to hit something that you can't hit. And this year in Arizona, I took my daddy side by side 16 gauge, and I was smoking them. I mean, you know, I was it felt so good. It feels better. It's more fun when you hit them, right, Anthony?
Oh yeah.
So anyway, I took my book to Anthony and said, "Would you sign my book?" And Anthony goes, "Well, Will, I'd be glad to sign your book." And I said, "Oh, you know my name." So Anthony, all these people that are hunters know, you know, who Will Primos is and what he did with TV shows and hunting products my whole life. At one of the events here, a big regional event here at our club, some of the guys on a squad next to me recognized me. They ended up stopping the shooting to have their pictures made with their hunting hero from video world, from the world I grew up. It was hilarious. So it's been a lot of fun meeting people from all over, but I've learned to be so much a better shooter. It is incredible. Anthony is exactly right. When you don't get enough opportunity to know what to do with that gun and how to connect and how to look at the target rather than the gun, you're just not going to be as good.
Yeah. You know, one thing that, I got this book, I think I got it originally from Kerry, and I was like, the idea of sitting down and reading a book about shooting wasn't super interesting to me. You know, it's one of those things, honestly, it's like, I love having a shotgun in my hands, you know, sporting clays, birds, whatever. But the reading of a book is like, this is going to be kind of arduous. And the reality was the exact opposite. Honest to God, as I prepared to do this podcast, it was like, I'm one of those guys, I got to read the book cover to cover. Like, I'm not going to do a podcast with two writers of a book and not have read it. I read this book in 2 hours on one night. And that to me, right, like when you think about, that's not a huge commitment. And it was the opposite of the daunting task I was expecting. And it was a very enjoyable read that, you know, when you think about improving yourself as a shooter, as a hunter, you're like, well, I'm a physical learner, right? Like I wanted the shotgun in my, but I picked up a ton of tips that through this book that I can go out and apply to the field. Like it wasn't a mechanical read. It was a very fun, enjoyable, down to earth read. What's the reaction been? Is that similar? My overview been similar, or have other people given you other feedback?
I'll answer it, then Will can chime in. I think that it's been received really well. It covers everything that we wanted to cover from the context of us being both very experienced hunters, I'm not a turkey hunter. We cover turkey hunting mm-hmm. in there. Obviously, that's Will's area of expertise. We wanted to cover all the different things you might be hunting, upland birds, dove hunting, because there's a practical aspect of that for whoever might have the book. We wanted to get into the fundamentals of shooting to actually understand, you know, there's a science behind shooting a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to break that down for you. And there are parts of it that are kind of technical, right? And we wanted to explain to you at least enough about eye dominance so that people can make decisions and think about something maybe they were never even thinking about before. And then there's a big part of hunting that I feel like is, you know, I take a reasonably good number of people hunting that are much less proficient both as a hunter and as a shooter than I am, right? So I wanted to share, this is what you need to know based upon me watching people that are less experienced than me and shortening your learning curve as much as practical, mm-hmm. you know? So no, I think it's been well received. And I think that, you know, to like what you said is we didn't want to write the book just from the perspective of this is how you shoot a crossing shot and you're going to use a pull away method or a swing through, you know, that's going to be boring, right? Mm-hmm. You can't read, you know, 100 and some pages of about that, you know, so it covers what you need to technically, but it gets into, you know, some things that are the most important tips that I think. And we had this section on, which I think is major, you know, the field craft section where it talks about like how to actually maximize all your opportunities in the field, depending on the species that you're after. That becomes even more important as you're learning to shoot, because you might pick up a few things there that give you a few more birds in your bag because you're not as good of a shot as you hope to be someday. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's, you know, I go hunting and have my father-in-law with me, who's exactly like the average. I take him a couple times a year. He's like exactly the average hunter that goes out a couple times when their buddy takes them. And, you know, he's been shooting a shotgun his whole, you know, since he's in high school. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, but he doesn't know what to do. Right. Mm. You know, by my definition, right. You know, so, you know, you can say that and it's like, well, how does he not know what to do? He's been going out hunting since he's 17 years old. And he goes a couple times a year. Well, you know, I used to hunt 60 days of duck season, right? You know, and I'm a professional sporting clay shooter, you know, so my definition of what to do in what situation is pretty high, yep. right? You
yep.
know,
yep.
you know, I'm pretty ambitious for what I would want someone to accomplish, right? So we wanted to share, like, how do Will and I take our experience and shorten someone's learning curve, you yep. know? So that was our goal with the book.
Will, you've accomplished just about everything possible in the outdoors. You know,
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, you've had a tremendous career. You know, we talked about the Purdy's and your contribution. Why a book? What was the catalyst for you to say, you know, I do want to be involved in this. This is important to me.
That is a very perceptive, I will say, question, because when Anthony called me after he signed my book, he calls me and says, "Let's write a book together." And I said, "What are we gonna write a book about?" You know, and he goes, "We're gonna write a book about your story about learning to be a better shot with a shotgun and what you learned from straight shooting." And I thought about it and I went, my initial response was in my head was, "I don't know if that'll be what anybody wants to read," but I said, it's Anthony Matarese. I mean, he's one of my heroes. Okay, I'll do it. And as we did it, and then developed the book, and then I actually started reading the drafts, and I began to realize how absolutely important this book is. I would have given anything to have had this book 50 years ago. It would have brought me so much more joy in the woods and so much better shooting. I mean, I can remember the duck hunt that I was on when we had to set up with Gadwall's Crossing. They were, because of the way the wind was and where we could hide, because you got to hide when you're duck hunting. And so it was a perfect setup. It was sleeting and raining and trying to snow, and they were coming into the wind. And so I was able to, you know, have these crossers. And I remember seeing this group of about six Gadwalls coming in, big Drake in the lead. I went, I looked at the guys, I thought, I'm going to shoot first. They said, okay, you shoot first. And, you know, I got it right on him, and I aimed, and I'm looking right down that barrel, and I pulled that trigger, and I pulled that second barrel. He's still flying somewhere. And I told myself, I said, I am going to figure out how to do that. I'm going to go take lessons from somebody who knows how to do this. And that's what started the journey. Hmm. And I've taken many lessons from a lot of different people, taken lessons from Anthony. We took lessons so we could kind of formulate the book and understand what we needed to say and do. And so Kerry Luft was right there recording everything we said, and Anthony talking to me and teaching me. Mm. And, you know, Anthony he does this full time every day. He's a finance major from college. So he's smart, he's articulate, and he can explain to you what it is you need to do. You know, and I remember the last time I was up there, we went and shot just a few stations. And so I'm trying to shoot this one target, and I missed it. And he goes, look, when we went back to that station, Anthony said, I know why you missed it. You're handling it like this, and this is how you need to handle it. And I went, okay. Well, I did not think about that. And I tried it and smoked it. And I'm going, so he understands those angles, the distance, speed, and the angle of an object and what it's doing, be it a wild bird or a clay. I'm going to tell you what, if you go hunting with him, take his gun away. Because if he shoots first, you're not going to have anything to shoot at. I mean, the guy don't miss. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. If I summarize, you know, kind of back to your question, like where you said, you know, why a book, right? You know, so it's kind of really my idea, right? And
yeah,
and it came from Will telling me, you know, man, I got into sporting clays because I need to learn how to hit shots in the field. And I been doing this for 50 years, you know, and I just got tired of missing when I'm out quail hunting or I'm duck hunting. And he told me the story about shooting ducks. And that was kind of like when he was just like, what in the world am I doing? You know, and that kind of started him on his journey to become a better shot in the field. And that's how we cross paths. Right. So when he, you know, because then he got into sporting clays and, you know, he was just going to go out there and shoot clays to practice. And then he took on a whole life of its own. And he's entering tournaments and doing all that. And that's how we crossed paths. You know, so when he told me his story, you know, I'm like, look, here's a guy that's been a hunter, you know, his entire life. Mm-hmm. He's people in the hunting community know him. Mm-hmm. They look up to him as a professional hunter, right? He's on TV teaching people how to be a better bow hunter, teaching people how to be a better turkey hunter. And this is a guy that's sitting here telling me, man, I really did not understand how to shoot my shotgun like I know I'm capable of, mm-hmm. right? He knew he was able to do better than he was doing, right? And that's the only reason that we crossed paths, you know? And then I had already written the book that he was referencing. That's how we crossed paths, because he wanted me to sign the book, which is, you know, is strictly a sporting clay book. The book we wrote is, you know, about being better in the field, you know? And I just thought, I said, what better guy to write a book with than a guy that's already in the hunting space? People already recognize him, and his story of, you know, the pursuit of being better at shooting a shotgun. You know, if someone can't relate to him, they're not going to relate to me, right? Because partly of your, you know, partly like you said, you know, oh, sporting clay shooters, that's different, you know.
Yep.
Will Primos is a hunter, right? Yep. You know, he's a sporting clay shooter, and that's what he's out there doing now. But you know, he spent his whole life in the outdoors hunting and selling people different things to make them more successful in the field. And I think that that was kind of the premise of the book, you know, like, Kerry Luff, the gentleman I wrote the book with, you know, is kind of our editor. He's also a sporting clay shooter, but he had worked for the Chicago Tribune for 30 years. So that, you know, we got the right guy helping us, right. You know, in terms of formulating, you know, making things read the right way. And, you know, Kerry and I had talked about doing a hunting book at some point, and we just, you know, hadn't got there, you know, and, just when Will and I crossed paths, I'm like, well, this is the guy to write a book with on hunting, you know? And I said, Will, we need to write a book. I called him, you know, he gave me his card, you know, when I signed the books, and, I called him the next day or that Monday, you know? And, you know, I said, Will, we should write a book together on hunting. You know, there's a bigger market of people out there hunting than there are clay shooting, and they need help, you know, from what I've seen. And, he's like, yeah, absolutely. He goes, look at me, you know, I'm case exhibit A, right. You know, and, you know, he said, well, I don't know how to write a book. I'm like, well, I do. So, yeah, let's get started. Right. You know, we just got a game plan together. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's fast. So for clarity, the book we're talking about, Straight Shooting for Hunters, is co-authored. The book that you wrote previously was just Straight Shooting, and that's for the sporting clay audience, right? So there are two books, similar names, but if you look for the one with four hunters and Will Primos, that's the book that I just got finished reading. And like you mentioned, there's some technical pieces to it, but I didn't find them cumbersome at all. And like you mentioned, that there's a upland chapter, there's a waterfall chapter, there's a turkey chapter, there's a deer chapter, that really, you know, if you can kind of choose your own adventure after you get through the first sections that are more technical. And, you know, for me, some of the most interesting and fascinating were the technical components about eye dominance and different leads and how to process the shot from your eyes to your brain. That to me was the most interesting. And so I'll transition our conversation a little bit from why a book and how a book to some questions I have about the book itself and some of the tips. Before I do that, I want to thank Onyx. Onyx Hunt is a proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever and a proud partner of On the Wing podcast. If you can look at the link in the show notes, it'll take you to onyxhunt.com. And there is a opportunity for you to use the code PFQF and get 20% off your Onyx membership right now. And you got to be thinking about turkey hunting as we're recording this episode this spring. And Onyx is a tremendous tool when you get out turkey hunting. And every time one of those PFQF codes is used, Onyx makes a contribution back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. All right.
Let me say this. So if you're a turkey hunter and you don't have Onyx, you're not as good as you would be, because I'm telling you that app is absolutely phenomenal. And especially at being able to mark a spot that you're in a big woods, you've never been there before. And they are sponsors of Straight Shooting for Hunters. They're the major sponsor for our book.
And, well, that's a great connection, because one of your proteges is our main point of contact with Onyx, Ben Bredigan.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So he worked for you at Primos, right?
He worked with us at Primos. He came down from Minnesota and ran the Primos TV and video department for a number of years. So Ben is quite the accomplished upland hunter. He's awesome. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Winchester and White Flyer Clays are also a big sponsor of the book. They sponsor Anthony, and they're pretty strong.
Well, It ended up being a terrific product, the book, and I enjoyed it. I'm left wanting to ask a couple questions, though. Anthony, do you have an opinion on what's the most difficult upland bird to shoot? Not the most difficult to hunt, but what's the most... Give folks an excuse computer here. Like, when they miss a shot, what's the hardest one to to hit?
I mean, I haven't done it much, but everybody tells me a grouse, right?
So, a rough grouse?
Yeah. And I'm assuming that's because you have more of a limited opportunity. And to be honest with you, I haven't done it. And I haven't had enough experiences grouse hunting to give you that statement, from experience, but the opportunities to shoot, I guess, in some thick cover are tough there. I mean, the hardest shot in the field, if we look at it outside of just the bird, right? Mm-hmm. So if I've got birds that are getting up, way far away from me, or you spooked, whatever the situation, the hardest shot is a shot that you have a limited opportunity, right? So you have a limited opportunity either because you're in a tight area and the bird gets behind the trees, or the birds are just getting away from you, meaning that they're already far when they flush. So if they're far when they flush, the moment that the bird is in range is not a very long period of time.
Late season roosters.
Yeah, that's always going to be the toughest shot, right? So that's where your fundamentals of gun mount determine how successful you're going to be. So if you don't have a good gun mount and your opportunities are more limited because they're getting out of range, or you're in a tighter area and thick cover where the windows lanes the shooter small, the gun mount's going to be make you or break you. You've got to be able to point that gun and look at the bird and shoot without worrying about alignment. All that's got to be correct before you get to the field.
So Bob, the techniques in the book, like what Anthony's describing right there, that technique is probably going to be mapped to the lead. Your brain is going to see the bird, see the distance, the angle, distance, and speed. And when you mount that gun, the mount needs to be a good, consistent mount. So you're looking down the barrel, but you're probably not going to have time to swing through, or it's going to generate too much speed at that distance with the bird. So you're going to mount to the lead. And it's magical when you do that and you mount to the lead. And you're also perceiving the angle of the bird. But I'm going to answer. So when you asked Anthony that question, which was the most difficult?
Yeah.
I'm going to say any upland bird that's crossing left to right or right to left, not going away. And the other thing is that, how to use your eyes in this situation. So I never could understand. This dove would come by me and he's barely flying. And then there's the other one come by doing 60 miles an hour. I don't know how fast he's going, but he seems 60. How in the world do you consistently connect? And I'm reading Anthony's book, Straight Shooting for Clay Shooters. And he said in there, if I have a good mount and I match speeds with the target, I probably won't miss. Something like that, Anthony, that you said. You might can correct me if I'm calling from memory. But I went, match speeds with the target? Oh, suddenly bells go off, because when you're mounting and you match speeds with that object and you're looking at the object, your brain can just tell you how far to stretch it possibly, to pull away from it, swing from behind, whatever technique you're using, but that gives you the connection. And that's what Sporting Clays did for the hunter in Will Primo's. It taught me how to make the connection on wild birds. That's what's so important.
Anthony, one of the things that stuck with me, I recall, I think you wrote that the single biggest mistake that hunters make is trying to be too fast. Am I recalling that accurately?
Yeah. So, then there's two big fundamentals of shooting related to that. So you have to be able to mount the gun into position with the bird. Okay. Most people see a bird and they mount the gun just to get it to their shoulder. Okay. I want to get shouldered and get their head on it and then look down the barrel. I don't want to be looking down the barrel. I want to be looking at the bird. So what that means is my mount's got to be good. My mount's got to be correct. So if I take my time and mount the gun, I can mount it accurately and my barrel is going into position to where I need to put it in relation to the moving target, whether it's a duck or a quail or a pheasant. So the synchronization in the gun mount takes a little bit of time. So I just race the gun to my face and mount it. I'm not positioning the barrel with the target at the same time. Then I'm trying to, you know, take the gun over there. So the other part that has to happen is if we can get the gun synchronized as we mount it, and then that matches the gun speed and the bird speed together. And when you match the gun speed and the bird speed together, now your eyes can work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you need to be looking at the target that you're shooting. So you got to be looking at the head or the color on it, something. Okay. Not down your barrel and at the bead. Okay. So it's kind of a sequence of events that if you can learn a good gun mount, just practicing at the house, then you don't rush it because you know it's going to get there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you've positioned it with the bird. So now the synchronization of the barrel and the bird are moving together. And when things move together, they slow down. Okay. If you're driving your car in traffic and everyone's going 80, it doesn't seem that fast. Okay. But if one guy's going a lot faster than the other, you recognize that speed right away. Okay. So that's what happens with the gun and the bird moving together, is most people are out of synchronization. So if we can get the gun and the bird synchronized, lead is kind of easy because it's just a little bit further in front, depending on the angle, speed, and distance of the shot.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have the gun and the bird in sync together, you can actually shoot the same target or the same type of target and hit one and miss one, and the lead looks correct, but the barrel speed is wrong.
Mm.
Okay. So the barrel speed has to be synchronized to the bird speed, and they're not all moving the same speed. And then the eyes have to lock on to finish the shot. When we say the eyes have to lock on to finish the shot, the average hunter shoots the shot looking at the end of the barrel or the lead. Okay. Your best shotgunners, whether they're in the field or they're shooting clay targets, finish the shot by looking at the target that they're shooting at. The barrel is going to be kind of like the hood of your car. It's there, you see it, but you're not watching it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of all of that is related to this rushing idea, right? You partly why people are rushing is because they're out of synchronization. Things seem fast. They haven't practiced their gun mount really. You can't put your gun away when the hunting season ends in January or February and get it out for the first time in October and expect to have a really good gun mount.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no other discipline that you do, you know, that you're going to be as proficient as you could be. So even if you're not getting to the clay target range, if you can practice your gun mount and be able to get it right to where it hits your shoulder and your face simultaneously, and there's no hiccups and your hands are moving together, now you can point that gun wherever you want to point it, right? And it's going to go there. If you said, I'm going to point at the light on the wall, or I'm going to point at the corner of the picture frame, you can look at the corner of the picture frame and your barrel's going to go right there if your hands are in sync. So now you realize that you have more time than you think, you know? So there's a little bit of that rushing comes from being afraid the bird is getting away from you, but the steps that people are implementing can be inefficient. I'm a firm believer in whether you're getting out to a clay target range or you're just getting your gun out of your house, got to be able to mount the gun well. Okay. When we say mount the gun well, that doesn't mean that you bring it in, you mount it up at your house and you look down the barrel and your beads are in line. Okay. That has to be there. Okay. But you've got to be able to get to that position without thinking about it. You know, if I grabbed my gun and threw it up, my eyes in line with the gun and I'm pointing it wherever I pointed it. Okay. You know, that quick, if I had to go that quick.
Mm-hmm.
But most people are rushing because they're trying to get the gun up. Then they're trying to look down the gun. Then all of a sudden it feels like the bird's getting away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're in a rate. Go ahead, Will.
You're talking about that slow motion deal. So I've watched Anthony shoot in tournaments, and the guy in front of him is not as experienced as Anthony is. And he gets up there and he looks like he's all rushed. And Anthony steps up there and he acts like he's dancing in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
It's because he knows how to access and match. It's just magical. So Anthony looks slow and everybody else looks fast, but he's not moving. He's moving in sync with the target and connecting to it, and he knows when to pull the trigger.
As Anthony explains it, I pick your sport is what's going through my head. Like as a football, a quarterback with a wide receiver running down the field, and you're not, the quarterback's not watching the wide receiver the entire time. There's footwork, there's, you know, the arm strength and kind of inherent timing to visual, to brain, to body in harmony to make that pass. Same thing with hitting a baseball, you know, it begins with footwork, looking at the, you know, focusing on the ball coming, you know, Ted Williams talked about being able to read the laces as there's the ball spinning, right? And so much of wing shooting, I can draw parallels to, you know, a hockey player hitting a slap shot in motion, you know, it, there's so much, you, I think you called it in sync, you know, it's that hand-eye coordination that we all intuitively know when we're talking sports, but we sort of forget that it's incredibly important in wing shooting. Your feet have to be in harmony with your arms and your hands and your brain. I mean, you're shaking your head, Anthony.
You're dead on. I mean, the average hunter, you know, I use the word the average hunter, just the guy that gets out hunting, you know, a couple times to 10 times a year, I would still call that person the average hunter, right? You know, they haven't necessarily been trained in the fundamentals of shooting. They've learned kind of whatever they've learned along the way, right? Kind of trial and error. Their buddy told them this, their grandpa told them to do this when they started. And they're, most people are shooting their shotgun with the equivalent of, you know, the analogy would be like, you know, they're watching their baseball glove, trying to catch a ball. Okay. And trying to shoot a quail that's hauling ass away from them, you know, while the analogy would be looking at their gun and trying to make a good shot instead of having that balance between all that hand-eye working together with some of those fundamentals that they even started with their gun mount at their house. You know, if you watch your baseball glove, you're not going to be that good of a baseball player, you know?
Right.
You know, you watch the hood of your car when you drive down the road, you're not going to be that good of a driver. So, you know, most people just don't think of that, right? You put a gun in their hand, you know, they think aim it and how much lead do I give it? Right. You know, that's what comes to mind. The parallel, you know, sometimes I have someone show up for a lesson that's a novice. I'll say, tell me about your shooting. Well, I don't have much experience with a shotgun, been out once or twice, but I'm very, very experienced with a pistol and a rifle. And I go, okay. You know, well, what we're going to do today is closer to playing baseball than shooting a pistol or a rifle. Okay. You know, if you can remember what you did when you played baseball and threw a ball and what your coach told you, that's going to be closer to what you need to do to be a good shotgun shooter than anything you learned with your rifle. There's nothing related, right? You know,
try to hit a baseball by looking at the bat and see what happens.
Will, you've explained the idea of soft focus to me a number of times. I want you to walk me through your dog's on point, where are your eyes, and coach us through that so we're looking where we should be.
Well, you don't, the dog's, his nose is so incredible. He's getting that scent and he's on point. So just because his nose is pointed at a certain spot doesn't mean that that's where the quail are. But let's just say you've got a clump of grass and it's bare ground everywhere, and you pretty well know that that quail is right there in that grass. So don't look at the grass. Look soft focus beyond it and above it. The eyes come back into focus a whole lot faster. I forget the number, but it's tens of thousands of times faster than the eyes go out to focus. So you have soft focus out beyond the grass. So when the quail erupts, your eyes come back, grab the flash, and now your eyes are focused on some aspect of that bird, be it its beak, whatever you might, its head, whatever you can catch. And if your mount is good, it's like pointing your finger at somebody. You don't look at their eye. I'm pointing my finger at your eye right now. I don't look at your eye, my finger. I'm looking at your eye.
Right.
And it's the same thing with a shotgun. I was shooting with Anthony in preparation for this book. And I'm shooting these trapped teal. And I'm looking, the trap's not that far from me. It might be not quite 10 yards from me. And this thing is hauling butt going away. And Anthony says, those woods over there, 300 yards. I want your eyes over there in soft focus on those trees. okay. And then I asked him, because your eyes come back. Mm. And so I could so much quicker access the target and tell my hands where to go. And if I set up correctly, then I can make that move and break that target. And once Anthony had me do that, I started breaking them so much more consistently because I was using my eyes correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think you first told me that in October when we were in Mississippi. So I had most of the hunting season and I run short hairs, so I'm working off points. And many times, particularly rough grouse, you know, a dog would be on point and or woodcock, right? And you're like, you can see where it is. And I historically, if I could see the bird on the ground, I was terrible. Because exactly what you explained, right? Your eyes are on the bird. And when that bird flushes, my eyes couldn't catch up to the bird, right? And I was behind. I was like trying to hit 101 mile an hour fastball. In the plane of it was all messed up. So I quit looking for where I thought the bird was, and I would just approach in front of the dog, soft focus out, let the bird be where the bird's going to get up, but then have my eyes pull into the bird after the soft focus. And, you know, I'm not an incredible shooter, but it improved me dramatically.
Your eyes are going to go to that movement, you know.
Flash.
If you think the brush that the bird might be in is 5 yards or 10 yards in front of you, and you kind of start getting fixated on a smaller area there, mm-hmm. and it doesn't come out right there, you're going to see the bird way late. Mm-hmm. Okay. So your eyes are going to grab that movement because it's their survival instincts. Okay. If you're looking beyond a certain distance, okay, it's a survival instinct that your brain needs to know what's inside of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. From a survival instinct, it could be a threat. Okay.
Right.
So your brain grabs that movement to make sure you're safe is actually what's happening. So that's why that reaction is so much faster. If something is right in front of you, okay, your eyes don't have to move as fast because it's not a threat. Mm. Okay. So it's engaging an instinct essentially. You're actually tricking yourself to use an instinct that you use all the time. You're walking along and you see something out of the corner of your eye, you turn your head real quick. Okay. Just to see what it is, right? You do that every day without even paying any attention to it. Right. Mm. Because that's a safety measure,
right?
You know, so that's really what you're doing. You're actually using the biology of the way your eyes work correctly.
Mm. Bob, your question back to Anthony a little while ago, what's the most difficult upland bird? And Anthony was responding, probably, you know, grouse because of the trees. And I'm going to put back on Anthony something he told me one time. He's got me up at M&M, which is an incredible sporting clay facility. They just had the world championship there, so they can accommodate a big crowd. So we're in the woods, and the trap's over here, and it's going to go by the trees. And, you know, I missed, and I said, the trees are – I'm not doing well because of the trees is what my excuse was to Anthony. And Anthony's answer was, a response was, what trees? In other words, you got to be looking at the clay, the flash of the clay. And you got to use your eyes right and just don't even think about the trees.
Mm.
Same thing for grouse.
Engage the mechanism if you get that reference from an old baseball movie. So I want to ask a really personal question from my point of view. So I grew up with a lazy eye. Now I'm right-handed. In first grade, I had to wear a patch over my dominant eye to increase the power of my right eye. So as a red-hander, you know, my primary eye is weak. How do I overcome that outside of, you know, trying to convert to being left-handed?
So what do you do? So you're right-handed, you shoot right-handed.
Yep.
And you feel like your right eye dominant as far as you.
Right. Correct.
As far as you know, but your right eye is kind of a lazy eye.
Yep.
Right. When you say weakest with the muscle or weakest with just like
vision,
visibility. Right. So when it's corrected, what's it corrected to? Like, you know, how well can you see when it's corrected?
Let's say I'm I probably have 40% the vision of my good eye. It's so blurry. It's significant.
Right. So your left eye is...
It's not a wanderer, but it's blurry.
Your left eye is way clearer when you see out of that eye.
Yep.
And then when you shoot right now, you leave both eyes open or you...
I try to leave them both open. Yep.
Right. So the, you know, so a couple things, right? If you were a little kid, you know, so what happens with a lazy eye, so to speak, you know, is, or someone that has like just bad vision, maybe it's not lazy eye, like people think of it by definition, but like, man, we can't correct this vision to get any better than, you know, if I close my good eye and I look out at 40 yards, things are fuzzy.
Yep. Okay. Exactly.
You know, there's not a direct correlation. There's a correlation, but not a direct correlation. There's not a direct correlation between acuity or clarity and dominance. So there's people that think, man, my right eye must be my dominant eye, or my left eye must be my dominant eye because my prescription is way stronger in one eye. Right. And even if we correct it, I can't see perfect. Well, the eye that you don't see perfect out of can still be your dominant eye. Okay. So that would be the first thing that I, if you pointed at a cell phone camera from about 8 yards away at the camera with both eyes open with your right finger and your left finger, and you're welcome to do it to me, do it and send me the picture. You need to know how that acuity or lack of clarity is affecting your dominance.
Gotcha.
Okay. Because, and they're not directly related. Okay. But you have some type of eye dominance, period. You know, whether you have perfect eyes or eyes that are not perfect. So we need to know what the fact is related to eye dominance. And then in your case, we would be looking at how your eye dominance test is and see how that relates to your, you know, how that relates to your, you know, is there a correlation between that relates to your clarity or your acuity? We're not going to see that just in the test, but really what is the most important answer to your question? If you test right eye dominant still, like pretty, you know, and dominance is kind of a scale. So the kind of poke a hole in a paper, put your hands up, that's called an aperture test. It tells you if you're right eye or left eye, but that test only tells you 100% one way or the other. And the way eye dominance really works is it's like a degree. Okay. So you could be 100% right eye, you could be 100% left eye, and you could be some form of center dominance where, like, I would say you're like 80% right or 90% right, you know? So that matters, based upon, what we decide to do. So in your case, if you send me a picture and you test right eye dominant, then what I'm going to tell you is you just leave both eyes open for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. And definitely learn to shoot with both eyes open and force it. And, you know, if you're having trouble shooting with both eyes open and you are strong dominant on one side or the other, then that just means you're looking at the barrel too much. Okay. If you're looking at the barrel too much, it's difficult to learn to shoot with two eyes. Okay. If you're trying to learn to shoot with two eyes and you're confident that you're not looking at the barrel, you know, the easiest thing would be go to like an incoming shot on a clay target range, incomer, shoot with a hunting mount, and stare hard as you can at the bird and mount the gun and shoot right at it. But don't even just ignore the barrel. If you can't hit it, you know, we could have some dominance going on there, you know, if the person didn't go through testing themselves. Essentially what you're looking at when you point at that cell phone camera is, where is the alignment? You know, is my finger here or is my finger over here near my left eye?
Right.
Is it on my nose? If it's on my nose, then I'm getting alignment from both. Okay. So the answer to your question is, you know, if you test strong right eye dominant, absolutely just learn, make sure both eyes are open, make sure you're really looking at the target, because your left eye is just going to help your vision, but it's not going to, your left eye is going to help your vision, but it's not going to screw up your alignment. It's not going to screw up your, where you think you're pointing at. Right. If you tested left eye dominant, okay, in your test, you know, I would say, man, you know, leave your eyes open, but then squint that eye probably when you're out in the field, because that left eye is going to screw you up during the shot. You know, if you missed easy shots that you can't believe you missed, you know, and that left eye is getting in there with some dominance, you know, then, you know, you're in a little bit of a tough situation there because you don't see that well with the right eye.
Right.
You know, so, but you can't have the left eye take over and shoot cross dominant, you know, where you're seeing across the gun. Depending on how your eyes tested, you know, if you tested left eye dominant and you were weak in your right eye, and you were younger, okay, I would say definitely shoot left-handed, yeah, right?
Right. Yeah. Become
if a kid shows up and he's right-handed, left eye dominant, and he's, you know, eye dominance changes a little bit between age, you know, 8 and 15. But by the time you're like a teenager, it starts to really, you know, become whatever it's going to be. It's probably what it's going to be. You know, I switch people shoulders all the time. Mm-hmm. I switch older people, you know, 50 years old from one side to the other side all the time, depending on what their experience is. Right. You know, so the guy's just getting started and he's strong left eye dominant. He doesn't have any baseline of what his success is right handed. So if you can move them over to the other side, you know, but we have to get eye dominance can get very complicated. Right. And that's not even, you know, why we're on the topic. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. People are getting one contact lens for distance, one for reading. They're getting, you know, bifocal glasses where progressive, meaning that mm-hmm. they look out of the bottom of the glasses and it's for reading. The top of the glasses are for distance. You know, when you're shooting a shotgun, you need both eyes for distance. Okay. There's people even getting laser surgery now and correcting one eye to be able to read close and one eye to be able to see far. All these things are going to screw up your shooting. And there's a lot of people, you know, doing that. There's a lot of people, I ask them, you wear contacts? Yeah. Both for distance? No, my left one's for reading. Well, you can shoot that way. You're not going to shoot as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because you're not seeing the right thing.
Right.
You know, you're seeing the gun well in the left eye and the bird well in the right eye. You need to see the bird well in both eyes.
Right. Right. And it explains, you know, some shots are going to be better or easier for me with a dominant left eye, right? Like the crosser from right to left, I tend to hit pretty successfully.
Because you got built-in lead.
Yep. For whatever reason, the straightaway where the bird's rising is a challenge for me.
And right. So you probably have, you know, your acuity is probably affecting that dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, and if you can't believe you're missing a basic going away shot, you probably need to squint that left eye.
Yeah. Well, I just got coached. Thank you.
Yep.
Where can people find the book, Anthony?
So we have the book available on Amazon. The paperback copy is available on Amazon. It's available in a paperback. It's available in an audiobook, and it's available in an ebook. And then you can also on my website, clayshootinginstruction.com. There's a limited edition hardback, real nice case laminate book that's available on my website, you know, kind of a good coffee table book. But that one's a little bit more expensive, but right on Amazon, I think it's $24.95, you know, ship it right to your house.
And it's on sale right now. So as I'm looking at it, it's on sale on Amazon for $23. So
there you go.
Yeah. Great. Final question. We'll start with Anthony. You can go on a bird hunt anywhere with anyone for any bird. Tell us what you're going to do, Anthony.
Good question. I've been asked this before, and my response is probably not what people would expect. I would just hunt somewhere along the Atlantic Flyway, you know, probably around the Delaware Bay or the Chesapeake Bay, places I've already been, and, you know, go hunting with my dad and my brother. Kind of grew up there doing that, and we've got some, at the right timing in the right place, we've got some pretty good waterfowl hunting, and I travel, you know, 60 or 70 days a year for shooting competitions for 30 years straight. I really don't want to go anywhere, you know, if I don't have to. Right.
So Bob, Anthony says that he wouldn't live anywhere else in the world because he lives on the Delaware Bay and he is a big game fisherman.
Mm.
I mean, I think the other day he caught 19 marlin in one day. Is that right, Anthony?
Yeah, we had a good day this past summer. So we live in a great spot. You know, people think of New Jersey. I've traveled all over the world and people think of New Jersey and they go, "You're from New Jersey?" Mm-hmm. You know, I go, "Yeah." Wow. I can just tell by their response, like, you know, they're thinking, man, it must be a terrible place. And what, you know, why would you want to live there? You know, so we're in Southern New Jersey. It's super rural. You know, we're close to everything. We've got great waterfowl hunting with not far away. You know, that there's a lot of outdoor opportunities. I do a lot of offshore fishing for marlin and tuna. And, you know, we can be in the mountains in 2 hours. And, you know, we could also be, you know, in downtown New York City in 2 hours, you know, with anything that you wanted possibly. So we're in kind of a outdoor area, you know, but close to a lot of people, et cetera. So we're kind of on the edge of the population. So
Bob, not a bad spot to live. There are people who will, they cherish the opportunity to pay and be a part of his boat and go fishing with him. He's that good.
It's a 19 marlin in one afternoon. That sounds wonderful. Same question to you, Will. If you were able to hunt anywhere.
You know, I'm glad it's spread out a little bit. So if it's going to be October, it's probably going to be rough grouse and an occasional woodcock there. If it's December, January, you know, accessing great wild bobwhite quail in the South is not what it used to be. That's what kindled my fire for upland birds when I was 8 years old, because my Uncle Gus was a tremendous bobwhite quail hunter. But, you know, being in Arizona in the December, January time for Murns, Gamble, and Scaled is great. But, you know, give me September maybe if it gets cool in South Dakota and I'm hunting sharptails. Dang it, man, I love it all.
Yeah, I asked you for one. You gave me the whole season.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm right there with you, though. Fellas, thank you very much for sharing the time. The book, Straight Shooting for Hunters by Anthony Matarese Jr., and Will Primos. I'm Bob St. Pierre, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Yeah. I'll call you, Anthony.